Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, everyone. This is the Sound Health Options Show for April 20th, 2014, with Richard, Talk to Me Guy Olson, and Sherry Edwards. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning.
So tell us, we were talking backstage before the show started, and you had amazing, I'm in California, you're in Ohio, and you had an amazing weather event, or what I would call a weather event this past week. Could you talk about that just for a second, because it just blows my mind.
Oh, that's just normal for around here. On Sunday, it was 90 degrees. Everybody's out in their shorts, and the red buds are blooming. And then on Tuesday morning, it snowed.
And so you say that's normal in terms of, you know, your weather patterns? That's a regular kind of that happens every year?
Well, it's not totally unusual. It just, it can vary 60 degrees in a day here.
Wow. Okay, well, good morning, everybody. I mean, it varies, you know, maybe 40 degrees here sometimes. Yeah, 40 maybe, but that's really amazing for snow. Well, okay, well, good morning.
I have some wonderful news for everybody who follows us, and there are thousands of people listening to the show, so I think that's wonderful and want to thank the listeners for spreading the word. But as most of you know, we're sponsored by the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology and Sound Health. And you're never known in your own town to your own people. And we finally had a visit from the local university, their research department. And I didn't know what was going on. But they have asked us to join their research to help people who are in the dance department that have injuries, to help with a lot of other things. I think that is a major breakthrough, since they have been kind of an obstacle most of my life since I graduated there in the 80s. They just didn't believe what was going on. And when we're finally able to say that homogenous groups, people with like illnesses and syndromes and diseases, have similar, if not identical, vocal anomalies, then that makes them all happy because it's now provable. And right before the show, we were playing kind of an unusual anomaly in that tree ring. I was going to see if I could find it. They took a disc out of a tree, you know, a sliver, and played the rings. I don't know how they did it, but it was haunting music. So a lot of people are catching on to what we do, and that makes me happy, and I think our audience is responsible for all of that going on. So thank you, audience. I think you're very clever in passing this word out.
The power of social media. I love that.
Yeah. We should let people know that we are simultaneously broadcasting from WebEx, that I didn't think was going to come on this morning. They're having some trouble. And also from Blog Talk Radio. If you want to join us on WebEx and watch the show and see our very special guest, she's going to talk to you about something that I think we all need to learn about, especially me, I think, because I see people in so much trouble in their relationships, and I don't know how to help. And she has written a book called Vote, Victims Overcoming Traumatic Events. Let Your Voice Be Heard. And I really like that title, Let Your Voice Be Heard. Right before the show, we were talking to her about some research that we've done. We'll probably bring that up again, but we'll be with her in a few moments. We have a few announcements. So, Richard, you had a very important one that you wanted to talk about.
This one is in the category because I'm not worked up yet, But as we know, I could drop a, you know, at the moment, I could. This really just is in the category of, really? The headline of the article is, U.S. Postal Service joins in federal ammo purchases. That's right, our U.S. Postal Service. So and this is in a pile of, you know, requests. The Social Security Administration put in a request for 174,000 rounds. The Department of Agriculture is requesting 320,000 rounds. Of course, the Department of Homeland Security is requesting 450 million rounds. That's 450 million rounds. That's a lot of ammo.
They kill us all 1.5 times.
Yeah. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, yes, ocean, is requesting 46,000 rounds. And it's just, it's funny, as I'm scanning down this article, they're not really talking directly about how many the post office is requiring, but really? The postal system needs ammo? Really? It's just a shocking thing.
Why would the Social Security office need ammo?
I don't know.
They just send us out checks.
I don't know. I have no, this is just like with my morning coffee, like, really? I'm confused by this. You know, National Oceanographic Atmospheric Administration, the post office? Wow. That's it. I'll put the link in over at Blog Talk Radio, and I'll give it to you so you can put it at WebEx. It just blows my mind. That's in the category of blows my mind.
We are looking at it. And George has put up all the links for people in case you have any kind of problem blanking out with sound or audio. Do you have anything like that over at Blog Talk? Any kind of tech support in your chat?
Well, a guest can call. If they call the 347-850-1407, there's an option there for support, I believe. And if anybody in chat at Blog Talk Radio, because we can, if you go to get to the Blog Talk Radio, the easiest thing to do is to go to soundhealthoptions.com and then choose the Blog Talk Radio tab, I mean the radio tab at Sound Health Options, then click on Blog Talk Radio, and there's a link there that will take you to the Blog Talk Radio feed. And there's a chat there that I'm managing. And also you can call in at 347-850-1407, and I can answer your questions there.
You know, there's a great chat posting from George. He says, yes, they all think we'll be upset when they stop issuing any checks. Yeah.
Yeah.
But when you get Social Security now, you have to sign a paper saying they can go into your checking account and take what they want anyway. And when I ask why, it said, because if we overcharge you, you know, overpay you, we want to have a way to get it back. And speaking of that, have you heard about this garbage where 44 years later, and this is one of the extremes, they went back and collected money from a woman because there was an overpayment to her parents when she was like a toddler. And they went back and collected it. And on top of that, they're not allowing attorney-client privilege in any of these IRS cases. So it's just like stopping us at every corner. We probably should talk about this on Revolution Radio when we come up on Wednesday to do that. That is incredible what they're trying to do with the laws and just put people in a corner and shoot them down. Somebody sent me a thing yesterday, said this is about the Inquisition. But I think what we need to do is stay banded together and collected and not allow them to put a wedge in and cause us to fight. Maybe our guests can talk about that. I wanted to read one other thing that was sent to me. And this is because it's about the state of Ohio, where I am, and I'm reading this. I'll put up the chat, or in our chat, so you can grab it, Richard, for over there. President Obama, through his U.S. Solicitor General, argued before the U.S. Supreme Court, has now stated that lying in political campaigns isn't merely protected by the First Amendment's guarantee of free speech, but that it is a specially protected form of speech, which must not be hindered by any state government, such as the state of Ohio. Ohio has outlawed such intentional deception of your voters and has established heavy criminal penalties against it when it can be proven. The idea behind the law is that any democracy in which lying in political campaigns isn't penalized by severe penalties won't remain a democracy much longer, but will instead descend into a kleptocracy, theft of elections themselves via lies, so that they become just normal elections, which are controlled by whatever autocrats can put up the most money to lie the most effectively to the biggest number of voters. Now, this went through because of Obamacare, keep your doctor, keep your whatever, and blatant out and out lies for Pinocchio's for lying. He knew it was a lie. They've proven it's a lie. And now they're trying to go to the federal layer and say that. So they can lie to you to no end. Any agency of the IRS, and sometimes when they've taken them to court about this, they don't even have any paperwork to prove that people were overpaid when you were a toddler, and now you're responsible. But they're collecting it anyway. They're just keeping your IRS refund, and it's up to you to fight in court to get it back. And they're not taking enough from each person to make it worth your while to hire an attorney to do it. So much for free America. Okay, two announcements. We are having another two-day free course, including the software. No, I shouldn't say this is a free course. This is a $1,200 course, but if you need some help with paying for it, there are scholarships available. Some people we let them in for free if they're from a geographic location where we want a bioacoustic center established. But this one's going to be on allergies and the power of allergies to affect your emotions. So that's going to be the first Thursday and Friday of June, June 5th and 6th. So let us know if you would like to be part of that, if you have people in your family, or you just want to help others. Also, when you combine it with our NanoVoice personality profiler, you can see how this is the allergies are affecting people's depression and anxiety and fatigue and how they get along with other people. So for those of you who are new, and I see a few new names, go to soundhealthoptions.com and download the NanoVoice. Right now, the free software that's up is Fibromyalgia, and there's a course in the textbook there. Of course, we keep radiation exposure up there all the time for people, especially those in California and on that west coast of North America. And if you want to know more about how to use that software, there's classes under Happy Hour. Richard, the only other announcement I have is about the keynote. Do you want to introduce the keynote?
I love the keynote. The keynote is this amazing thing that's monitored by various agencies, not just Sherry, but various agencies. And it's what I would call a note that's emanated by the cosmos, as Howard put it. The alignment of the, you know, how things, I don't know how it emanates, but it happens. I still don't understand how it emanates, but it does. And it's a note that Sherry's software reads, and she comes up with this thing that's called the keynote. And it just is always amazing to me at how it just fits with what people are calling me about usually the day before or in the week or some stuff to be conscious of, you know, things that are happening based on the keynote. I love the keynote.
I know how it happens. As the planets, as the planets move, any movement is a cycle per second and sets up a sound. So these are frequencies coming from outer space. Look at space like a pond or a lake, and you put a pebble in, and there's all the waves. And as these planets move, they set up a vibration. At least that's how Kepler in the 14th century decided to explain it. Okay. This is the keynote for April 21st, 2014, the energy of the beginning. Now, this is appropriate for the United States. This will be about 6 degrees off for people because I did this based on New York. And we do it like a three-day range on each side. But what I'm stumbling with here is the energy of the beginning, and this is like spring, but in Australia it's fall. So I don't know how to say this is just for North America or something. I don't know how to put that. But when you look at astrology, it starts with that Aries, and this is Aries into Taurus energy, the beginning of the spring. So this is the beginning of red-orange, and the very, very beginning of the astrology sign Taurus for our astrological kind of friends who like that part put in here. This is a little esoteric, Richard. So the first biochemical of conception, ADP, adenosine triphosphate, is a coenzyme of life, and it awakens along with RNA, ribonucleic acid, that keeps the pattern of our DNA. DNA is like the blueprint, and then RNA is like the workers. So the first chemical of life, ATP, and then the chemical that keeps the pattern are coming into fruition one day apart. The work at the Sound Health Research Institute is a combination of ancient esoteric concepts mixed with modern science. The first chemical of life, ATP, correlates to the frequencies associated with white light, and that's just math, it's physics. It also indicates the beginning of a new octave in music. Although ATP has other functions, such as cell respiration and energy metabolism, science has concluded that conception begins with the emergence of ATP, which guides cell division to create a new zygote. That's the first stage of development. And so it is that life begins and ends with white light. Much of the body's ATP is stored in the eye, although it's dispersed throughout the body. When the body begins to die, ATP implodes. This is likely the white light that is described by many persons as they are dying or by those who have experienced a near-death event. And so it is that ancient esoteric lore directly melts, I should say combined, with modern science perspective. RNA, also mucking about, ready to come into being, is directly behind ATP. RNA controls gene expression. While ATP arrives this year on Easter Sunday, RNA is not far behind on April 21st. The math matrix of the universe that our bodies emulate never ceases to amaze me. Any comment, Richard?
If I had a sound effect for applause, I would cue it in right now.
The keynote
always amazes me how it just fits, you know. I guess actually as I think about it, it isn't that it fits right in, it is, and then we fit, you know, we balance to the keynote. It's an amazing, I just love the keynote. That's my comment.
And nobody has answered our question that we posted on site, and this was from a 4-year-old listener. And he asked if rocks have family. I guess we were talking about rocks one day on the show, and that was a question. So So if anybody's got an answer for that, please let me know, and we'll pass it on. And Richard, would you introduce our very special guest?
I would be delighted. Rebecca Mahan, author of Vote, Victims Overcoming Traumatic Events, to find out how we can all make a difference. Vote is designed to guide law enforcement officers and other first responders in assisting victims, aggressors, and others regarding domestic violence and other traumatic events. Rebecca has spent nearly 20 years studying domestic violence and working with victims of various traumatic events. She was previously employed as a law enforcement officer and has been a field training officer for over 6 years. She obtained California Post Basic, Intermediate, and Advanced certificates and holds a private investigator license. Rebecca is a published columnist and a United States Marine Corps veteran. Wow. Good morning, Rebecca. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
I have to ask right out of the gate, what was the event? Was there an event that led you to want to write this book? Was there something in your career as either as a Marine or as a law enforcement officer, something that you had trauma from that led you into this, you know, dedication to this?
There wasn't one specific incident that kind of manifested into this program. It was a series of different things that I experienced through life and put together. So I had a really unhealthy marriage, and I utilized a lot of self-help techniques to overcome the situation and issues that I had experienced. And then I worked as a district sales manager, and I was given a lot of training and providing a lot of support to women to become successful. And I spent 6 years doing that. And when that position was no longer available for me, I put myself through the police academy because that was something that I had wanted to do. It was a dream that I had. And when I got to the domestic violence portion at the police academy, this light bulb went off with all of the things that I had experienced and how to make people successful, but to do it in a simple way that would combat domestic violence or prevent it. And so I had this idea. And later, I was hired at Sutter County Sheriff's Department in Northern California, in Yuba City. And at that time, I had been there, I think, about a year. And I talked to my supervisors and asked if I could implement a program, which I created, and that is the VOTE program, the Victims Overcoming Traumatic Events. And the idea was for law enforcement to have a new approach in handling domestic violence so that it can be reduced or completely eliminated. And they allowed me to program for 1 year. And the most astounding thing happened at the end of the year when the results finally came in. And that was that 97% of the households we did not go back to when we had called for domestic violence. Yes, it's huge.
Actually, it's incredible.
Sorry.
I see women go back and go back and go back when we're trying to help them out. And one of the things that we looked at, just like people have the love of certain music or certain notes, the women that went back, the men, had their missing note in their voice. So they'd go back just to get the sound of the voice, and they'd take a beating to get to hear that. So we gave them music and the notes that they needed, and at that point, they didn't go back as much, but it was not nearly as sophisticated a program as what you're talking about.
Well, I think that's very interesting because we know in law enforcement that voice analysis is very telling. So I could definitely see there being a correlation and would be interested in learning more about that and looking at the research you have from that.
Well, that was many years ago. I'll see if I can dig it up. We've written about it, but the raw data is not there. But I'm sure we could put it back together easily for people, because we have all the pieces. Here's how music is listed, and here's this, and here's this.
Go ahead.
Well, it's just another question. Go ahead with your comment.
Well, I'm working on a second book, which is specifically for victims, and the book that's out right now, Victims Overcoming Traumatic Events, Let Your Voice Be Heard, that is specifically for law enforcement and anybody that's considered a first responder in, and that could be a friend. And there's a lot in the book that if someone is looking for self-help, they can utilize as well. However, what I found is that really wanting victims to be able to go to a book and have as many tools to educate themselves with and be equipped with to either make a healthier relationship with the one they're currently in or get out of the relationship with a full understanding of where they're at. And so the book that will be coming out here shortly is part of the VOTE program, Victims Overcoming Traumatic Events, but this will be Out of the Shadows.
Oh, very nice title. And it was along
Thank
this
you.
Question I was going to ask anyway, that this is a perspective from support, and it's support from legal and law enforcement. Are there things in your book about support from a friend, because that's heartbreaking, and is there any information for people who are going through this and how to help themselves?
That's going to be addressed in much more detail in the second book. This is not about, the first book is really not about finding support in the sense where I provide resources or anything like that. It's the first line where the law enforcement officer that responds to a call for domestic violence is the one that builds a rapport with the victim. The current methodology is that when, for the most part, when law enforcement goes out in response to a house, a report is taken and the report is then referred to a domestic violence investigation unit, or what they call DVIU. And so they're kind of handed off to someone else. So in answer to your question, specifically whether or not the book has, you know, information sharing to have resources through and support through friends, that isn't the primary focus on this particular book, but it is in the second book. And it's in the second book, there will also be issues in how to tackle some of the symptoms that go along with it, including anxiety. So this would be great to have your feedback on the vocal profiling as well. So, but no, this is really the first line for addressing it from a response, an immediate response.
What is so different about this approach that caused such a difference in recidivism for these cases?
What is really interesting about this is that domestic violence is a silent epidemic, and people generally do not want things that are going on within their own home kind of hanging out on the laundry line, if you will. And so what happens is everything is kept quiet, and law enforcement only ends up responding when there's some type of crisis. And there's an entire cycle that happens for a couple, but when they get to what's called the explosive stage, they will end up, or someone will end up calling law enforcement, and law enforcement comes out. And the challenge lies when law enforcement, the current methodology for law enforcement in many of the states is to respond, see if one of the parties wants to prosecute or if there's state mandatory laws for custody or arrest, if you will, then that will be handled. But people won't call because they don't want their partner going to jail. And so law enforcement will go out. They'll contact the victim and the aggressor, And depending on what happens from there, it gets transferred over to a domestic violence investigation unit. It may go out to outside resources. Child protective services can become involved depending on if there's children in the home and what happens there. And so lots of people at this point become involved in the lives of an aggressor and a victim, and what it's now termed intimate partner abuse. What's different about this particular program, and this is what is so exciting, a law enforcement officer or a first responder that goes out, meets with a victim, they build rapport with that victim, and through follow-up, it shows that victim that there's support available in a couple of ways. One, that law enforcement officer or first responder is going to provide resources to get the victim assistance that they need. The second is they don't have to share their story with a lot of different people. In fact, they don't even need to repeat their story because the officer or the first responder that goes out already saw what happened and it doesn't need to be brought up again. All that needs to be done is how to move forward together. And so it's through a series of contacts, and my book has a template and specific directions on the follow-up that's required, which is extremely minimal, but it's very, very, very important. And that's what makes the difference.
I was really impressed with when I read the book, about the beat time management, the BTM template that you're talking about, that, because I had that same aha that it establishes a rapport between the officer and I'd like a different word than victim, but, you know, the person subject to the violence,
mm-hmm.
that it really does establish that. So it's everything that you're saying. It's such a powerful tool. It seems, I mean, as I read it seemed like, oh, that seems pretty straightforward. But it's so incredibly powerful what you're talking about. That's an amazing piece right there. Do you think that's part of why what you're talking about is so effective, is just here's the tool for officers to know how to use, and, you know, here's a fairly straightforward, you know, template, do this and it works kind of thing?
Thank you so much for saying that. And yes, I do think that law enforcement officers have so many things on their plate. And you may hear some of them say, I wear a lot of different hats. I'm a counselor. I'm an officer. I handle first aid. You know, they wear a lot of hats. So this particular book was not meant to have a lot of fluff in it, but just have the necessary tools for someone who wants to help their community make a change and also reduce the risk to an officer. The officer's safety is paramount in everything that we do. And this is just super simple. So I think the book is about 42 pages, and it just tells you the exact steps to take. And the nice part about it is it's simple and it's not time-consuming. But as you said, it's powerful.
Is there any place in your book or in plans for your new book where you're going to talk about the rights of someone who's just getting the snot beat out of them or being emotionally abused? I don't think people identify with the kinds of abuse. They don't know they're being abused until it's escalated to physical pain.
That's true, and there's a lot of forms of abuse, and it can be anywhere from verbal, emotional, mental, to actual sexual and physical abuse. So there's a wide scale, and we all have a different threshold to what we perceive as trauma. So someone can actually have a post-traumatic stress disorder directly caused by verbal abuse.
Hmm.
Is there anything in this book for, say, a neighbor who's trying to help afterwards or even before the police get there?
Well, the neighbor would be considered a first responder, and so would a family member or a friend that is actually going to a victim of domestic violence, and they can use this book the same as any law enforcement officer could? So the answer would be yes.
I've not read the book, so I'm going to shut up and ask Richard to. I have a few more questions, but I'm just going to shut up, Richard.
No, you're good. You're good, Sherry. I want to jump for a moment to asking a question about officer's safety, and I have a question. Is when an officer goes out to, or when officers go out to a domestic violence situation, is it one of the, I don't have a different word, I'll use tricky, but I mean scary, is it one of the trickier situations to go into because you have no, I mean, when you're going to a robbery, you know what you're going into. I've never been a police officer of any kind, so I'm making this all up. However, when you go into, you know, if it's a bank robbery, you kind of know what you're going into. When you're going into or an accident, you kind of know what you're going into. When you're going into domestic violence, you really have no idea what you're walking into. Is that a true observation?
It is a true observation. And not only that, is one of the most dangerous calls for a law enforcement officer to go on. And you bring up robberies and things like that. But we do know that there's certain behaviors connected with that. And they want to get away, right? They're not wanting basically to be confrontational. But in a domestic violence situation, you have emotions at a volatile point. You don't know what the risk is when you get there based on what those parties' past experiences include. So depending on, and I'm going to use something that's kind of as far as past experience, a little bit more scary. But let's say you have an aggressor, and generally speaking, in domestic violence, it's women that are victims and men are the aggressors. However, that is not always the case, and I really stand behind any support that men who are victimized follow the same methodology that I have in my book, because it works across the board. But at any rate, you have someone, let's say, who's about to hit their three strikes, like we have in California, and they're going to end up going back to prison. They're in this heated situation. They've ended up injuring their partner, and law enforcement's coming out. They know they're going to jail. They know that they're going to have to be accountable, and they're going to have consequences for their actions, and they're going to go to jail. And so they don't want to go, let's say. So depending on what's going on in the home, they may have a weapon, and they're prepared to fight or do whatever it takes not to go back. And when law enforcement comes on scene, that officer is the first one that's going to experience the fight not to go. And not only that, if they feel that they're going to lose their partner, they're apt to end up harming somebody, either serious bodily injury or death. And you can see that there's been a number of news throughout the nation that is where we have aggressors that are going out, and there's homicides. They're killing the mom and children that are in the home, and then turning the weapon, and we have a homicide suicide, you know, on themselves. So this is a huge problem, and unfortunately, a lot of people are paying. So the idea is to have prevention long before law enforcement comes out. But if law enforcement is the first line, then this is a way to do it very simply, but it's very powerful, the Victims Overcoming Traumatic Events program.
Well, also, I think it was in your book that you talked about one of the tricky parts is that when you walk into a scene, you may see somebody with a weapon or a pan or a pipe or, you know, who knows what in their hand, and somebody may be bloody or both people may be bloody, and you don't necessarily know as you walk into that scene, does that person have that thing in their hand because they just wrestled it from the other person? It's just that it's, when I started thinking about it, it's an amazing thing to walk into. Like I say, if you walk into a bank robbery, you kind of know what's going on.
Right.
That's simple. I'm not making light of a bank robbery. But I'm just saying, in this situation, you're walking into something where an officer has to do a visual intake so quickly of so many variables, and emotion is involved where, you know, as you say, so let's say the guy has been doing something bad and then wants to be, needs to be hauled off, that then the his partner may react to that. I mean, it's like it's an amazingly volatile situation. It's just, it, as I thought about it, it was just blowing my mind at the, you know, amount of data that you have to take in and then the review that you have to do very quickly and figure out what to do and how to de-escalate. It's amazing.
It is very true, and there is a lot of that. So in that respect, yes, it is tricky because you want to make sure that you keep all parties calm and that everybody remains safe and trying to assess the situation. So I can tell you in California, and as you may have seen on TV, our law enforcement officers are trained because this is such a high-risk call for service for officers. But our officers are trained to handle this, and they handle it very well. And I can feel confident that if I go out on any type of domestic violence call and I need to have an officer from an outside agency assist me, I know that we're all going to go in and we do protocols together. The one thing that I can say is for safety, we are trained extremely well at this. But there is a lot that an officer does have to assess, and you don't know when you go on scene what you are going to be exposed to.
It's just, the more I thought about it as I was reading the book, it was just, as I thought about that, because the steps in the book are very, you know, it's a very straightforward, here's the information, here's the, you know, the BTM and just lots of great information. But then when I thought about what you have to review, it just, it was blowing my mind.
Yeah, it's significant. It really is. And so if we can reduce or minimize if we can reduce calls for service to domestic violence home, it's going to make healthier, happier families. It's going to save the lives of officers. And it's going to allow officers to focus on other things that are in their community that need addressed. So, and that includes what we have, what we call COPS projects, which is community-oriented policing. So, and this was my kind of COPS project because I believe in the community-oriented policing model where when we connect with our community, we have fantastic results. So this could be a law enforcement officer's COPS project, or it could free up officers to focus on other things that they can do to assist their communities in moving forward in other ways.
I recently read a book, Why Did He Do That? And it talked about why men choose women who will eventually allow them to abuse them and dominate and overpower them. And I don't mean here to say anything negative toward women, but I would think that a way to look at this would be to start with the women. Why are you choosing this? To allow this, what is lacking in your life that you would continue, and then also to teach them in an outreach program of how to de-escalate something when a man starts the problem.
Let me go elaborate on this just a little bit, because that is the biggest question that people have. Why does she stay? Why does she go back? And basically, there is no one reason. If you were to ask a victim why they stay in a relationship or why they go back, you're going to hear some different things. But here's some common things you might hear. Finances. I don't make enough to get out on my own. I can't break up the family. Or I have made a commitment with God and I want to be true to my vows. There's a lot of different reasons why. Going back to a situation, part of it can be the manipulation and fear that aggressors place on a victim, and so they're afraid of what's going to happen, or they're struggling, and they don't realize how many resources are available. We have states that have a victim compensation fund that's up to, the average is $25,000 that a victim can receive, and that's for getting out of the house, mental health, dental care, all kinds of things to get the victim in a situation where they can move forward. But as far as education, you do have resources that are just about in every county, and there's national resources that are available. A lot of victims don't like to go to shelters or to things that are perceived only for, go ahead, only for, you know, those kind of people. They may separate themselves or something like that. But the VOTE program is expanding, like I said, for victims. I currently offer classes on Tuesday mornings in Oceanside at the MiraCosta College in Oceanside for victims. Their semester ends in about 4 weeks or so, and the program that will be offered again in the fall. But I am looking to teach this program to other people so that they can replicate this in their communities and have people overcome the trauma that they're experiencing by this domestic violence, the education portion of it. And this will lead into a third book, which will have a combination of the victims overcoming traumatic events, Let Your Voice Be Heard, and the one that's Out of the Shadows. And that combination will have a facilitator's guide and being able to train those who want to do the program as first responder and then also work with just victims.
So people who want to bring your program to their community should just get in touch?
Yes, and I can do a teleconference. I can come out and provide training. And my email address is voteprogram@yahoo.com. I handle one-on-one all of my own contacts and emails.
What's the best thing a woman can do just to stay out of that kind of situation? What's the first sign she should look at? Just how to not get there to the point where the police are going to be called?
Some of the things, one of the biggest components is identifying fear. And so when they're making statements or they're hearing statements, instead of listening to the words that being said, because that's a symptom of a fear if it's in a negative way, it would be trying to identify what the real issue is. So, for example, and this is going to be outside of a domestic violence situation, but let's say you're standing in line at a grocery store and there's somebody standing behind you and that person starts making comments about the checker. You know, that person is inept and here we're standing in line and this is taking forever. My question would be, what is a possible fear that person is experiencing at that point?
The person that hears the comments or the person making a comment?
The person making the comment.
Waste of time?
Right. Or maybe they're in a hurry to be somewhere. So instead of just saying, you know, I'm really in a hurry, I need to get going, they're making some kind of a derogatory statement about the cashier. So when we listen, when we can listen for negative comment, in a negative comment and identify the fear behind that, we can kind of deflect that on our self-worth and realize that there's something going on within that person that really has nothing to do with us. And we can identify that within ourselves when we hear ourselves making a comment that is negative and saying, okay, what is it that I'm really afraid of here? And when we can really work with ourselves in identifying what the fear is and overcoming that portion, we can deflect a lot of defensiveness, things that we perceive as someone being degrading to us, and work in a way that meets our needs. And this is an extremely healthy way also to either get out of a relationship or change it to being healthy. But if the other party doesn't end up responding very well. But the first thing is fear, identifying fear-based issues.
So your book is something that people could purchase and then take to their local police station and say, I'd like to help you get this started?
Absolutely, and I would love that. And if we had a listener who did that, I would love for them to email me and I could work one-on-one with them. Absolutely, and getting that going.
For those of you who are watching, we have Rebecca Mahan's address and email address up for you. Vote, as in casting a ballot, voteprogram@yahoo.com. And should we give out where they can write to you?
Absolutely.
Post Office Box 3490, Post Office Box 3490, Vista, V-I-S-T-A, California, 92084. One of the things that we like to brag about is our audience. They are very much, I want to help, I want to make a difference kind of people. So I would predict that you begin to hear from them, but we also want to open up our chat to questions. And so, Richard, do you have any questions from your side or any other questions for Rebecca?
Well, two questions that are related, but first I want you to talk a bit about when we think of domestic violence. I can't imagine what the numbers are, but I would say it's a very high percentage of people think when we hear the term domestic violence, we think of violence against women. And I have the sense, and I think there was some information in your book, that there are more domestic violence to men than we actually think. And I'm interested, is that correct? And, you know, why do we think that's not talked about more?
Well, it is correct. There is a lot of men who are victims of domestic violence. And in my opinion, I believe that it's not spoken out because men are raised to be strong. They're, you know, we tell our little boys not to cry. I don't have any boys, but the boys in our society, we tell, you know, not to cry. They need to stand up. They be strong, men, courageous, and women are the nurturers. And so we have these traditional roles. And so many men feel emasculated to have to call law enforcement and say that a woman in their home is hitting them. And domestic violence isn't always between two partners. It can be between cohabitating relationships, same-gendered relationships. But in the state of California, anybody that has lived in the home, basically, prior cohabitant as well, is considered in that spectrum. But men definitely are, and I do believe it because of the embarrassment that they would receive and the emasculating effects that has.
And a sort of a side question is, I've lived in areas where I've heard stuff happening and then police show up. So oftentimes is it the victim that frequently calls, or is it oftentimes somebody in the surrounding area that calls and goes, look, this is happening, you better get over here?
It's both.
Okay.
Usually the victim won't call until they feel like they're out of absolutely any type of resource left to have the aggressor no longer be out of control. So a lot of times a victim won't call because she knows what's going to happen. When law enforcement comes out, if there's a mandatory arrest law in your state, they know that when law enforcement comes out, if they see certain signs, an aggressor is automatically going to get arrested, whether or not the victim wants prosecution. It's where the law enforcement officer is acting as the state acting on behalf of the victim.
Mm-hmm. Is that true in California? Oh, go ahead. Go ahead,
yes.
Sherry.
We have an audience question. You're saying that this is for police, but also for first responders. She wants to know if she should take this or should consider taking it to her local hospital or emergency room.
Absolutely, yes. And the medical costs and healthcare were just in huge numbers into the billions of where we're seeing victims. And sometimes you will have victims that will go straight to the emergency room outside of having law enforcement show up. So absolutely, doctors, nurses, practitioners, anyone that is the first person that is going to have contact with domestic violence victims can utilize this book. And not only that, but you now have certain medical facilities such as Kaiser that when a woman goes in for her annual checkup at the gynecologist's office, she is being asked if she's a victim of domestic violence.
It's just part of the intake of health information?
That's correct.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of organizations that are wanting to combat it, but the challenge is what's done with it when a person says they're a victim at that point. And the victim is very afraid to say, yes, I'm being abused, because they feel that whoever's a mandatory reporter is now going to call law enforcement, and law enforcement is going to come out and talk to them, do an investigation, and ultimately their partner gets arrested. So if you have a healthcare facility or healthcare provider that utilizes this book, Ideas Prevention, and at that point not involve law enforcement, just with follow-up and support that victim is going to get the resources that they need.
There's a long audience comment here. I'll try to boil it down. She was in a relationship where she was being abused. The police got involved. And what she said was she was very intimidated by talking to the police, and she'd really like to see a volunteer organization of women who went through this so she could have had somebody to talk to that had been in that situation. And do you make room for that kind of second shelf or second tier, I guess would be a better way to say it, of having people who've been in this situation to volunteer for the next group of women who might be going through it?
I wish that was something that every single community had, but I don't believe that that's the case. And I think that this would be great for her to get involved in. But generally speaking, a law enforcement officer doesn't have there are agencies that have what's called TIP, trauma intervention, but that's mostly geared towards severe crisis where there's been severe bodily injury or fatality and not just on a domestic violence call. However, there are certain states like California who, when they respond to a call of domestic violence, they are required to give the victim a resource pamphlet on where that person can go and seek a support system like that, like what the question was that was there in the queue. And the challenge with that, I'm going to tell you, is when a law enforcement or emergency personnel or a friend or family gives you a pamphlet and says, here, go do this, most people don't pick up the pamphlet and say, I'm going to make that call. They're looking for someone to support them through that process because the fear is so intense about having what is going to happen. And if I tell my story, what's going to happen to my family? And they do need a support system going into that area of resourcism. So this is a great opportunity to have law enforcement establish the connection and show the support or any type of first response, and that way they can reach out and utilize the services that are available, because there's a lot out there and no one should feel bad about using them.
We have time for one more short question, and this is from the audience. What percentage of these cases involve alcohol and drugs?
I don't have a specific percentage. However, I read an article recently, and it indicated that there, I think it was something like 1 in 4, or that it was 4 times more likely for women that ended up going to jail based on crimes that were connected with being a victim of domestic violence, which is really interesting because this is a whole other area. But I'm going to say that there's probably a high amount of some type of self-medication going on. And it can be anywhere from shopping to actually overusing prescription medication to actual street drugs. But I would say that victims are looking out there, but I don't have a specific number.
And I want to ask a question about, in your career of observing this, in your 20 years and other that you've been looking at this, do you think there's been an increase in domestic violence, or is it that there's more of an observation of domestic violence going on, social media, et cetera?
It's interesting. I just had this conversation with someone last night, and I do think that the domestic violence is increasing. And I think the severity of it is increasing just in proportions that are completely unacceptable. And this is where we have the homicide-suicide. And you can see that easily as you hear the stories around the nation.
Well, I'd like to end on a more up note. That isn't what I wanted
Absolutely.
To go for.
Absolutely,
I hate to say that, but yes. It just seems so that I think it's partially because everybody has a camera on them now. So I think there are more things observed. There's more notice of it going on. But in my lifetime, it seems like more of it has been occurring. Even if I used to read newspapers or talk to local police, it just seems like a lot more of it is going on.
There is.
So I would say... Go ahead. There is. Okay. Thank you.
There is. But on the upside...
I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, go ahead. I'm so sorry. I just want to make sure that it goes on a good positive note. On the upside, there are so many resources.
No, please. Yes, please go. Yes, go with a positive note, please.
There are just so many resources that are available now to help all members of the family through mental health and through programs like mine where people do want to help. And it's The children can be assist, victims can be assist, aggressors through anger management and other resources. So while, yes, we do have a rise in that, we have a rise in a number of resources that's there for your entire family, and the VOTE program is one of them.
I think it's a great, it's such a straightforward book. I just wish there was, I envision you on a TED Talk. That's sort of my thought about it. I would like to see more people. It's not a subject people want to talk about, but I just think it's such a powerful subject, and I think that this book is such a great, I'm using air quotes around the word easy, but, a good step-by-step on how to have people have a system, in enforcement, have a system to be able to use to, begin to support people in a different way. The B-team, the BTM thing is just like... so miraculous when I read that. I just thought, that makes so much sense. So I want to thank you so much. Great information, Rebecca. And any last thoughts, Sherry? Thank you very much.
Just thank you for doing this on Easter Sunday, and thank our audience. They really appreciated what they're saying. A lot of positive comments are coming to me from them in the chat. They really appreciate what you've said. They see some ways in helping their community.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rebecca. It was great. I suggest everybody go to voteprogram.com or to Amazon and look for VOTE, Victims Overcoming Traumatic Events. And, it's not a fun subject, but it's a powerful solution.
When you get your new book out of the shadow, call us.
Yes, I will, and I'd be interested in the data on the vocal profiling for the domestic violence. I would be very interested in that.
I will get you an email and invite you to a class.
Fantastic.
Okay.
Thank you so much, and I thank your listeners for taking the time as well.
Thanks again, Rebecca, and thank you, Sherry. Everybody have a great Easter Sunday, and we'll talk to you next week. I'm not sure. Oh, we're talking about my favorite subject on Wednesday on Revolution Radio. I'll be ranting about fracking. Yikes! Okay, thanks everybody. Have a great Easter. Bye-bye.
I'm going to have the scoop on Harry Reid and Clive and Bundy, too.
Wow.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Have a great day.